Lori, I want to begin by asking you about your husband. You said that you met him at a party, I think.
Yeah.
And I would like you to tell me about his family.
I met him at a party. It was my girlfriend's birthday party. And I was not interested in him at all. He was not my type. But he seemed attracted to me and wouldn't let me leave. I wanted to leave because I had gone by myself with another girlfriend. Well, with another girlfriend. We went alone, without men, without escorts. And it turned out that everyone there was paired off, and he had a girl. But he didn't like her or something, so he paid an awful lot of attention to me. And I didn't know that he had this girl with him, but because he paid so much attention to me, I thought he was alone. And then he asked to take me home, and because Lydia and I had taken the bus, I didn't especially want to go home on the bus at 11 o'clock at night. And even though I didn't know him, and I felt safe because Lydia was with me, I told him where I lived, and he says, oh, my sister lives right around the corner from you. So I felt safe, you know. And after all, this was all neighborhood stuff where everybody there had gone to the same school. We'd all grown up together, even though he was older than the rest of the kids there. And he took me home, and he says, my sister lives right around the corner from here, and I visit her an awful lot. May I come over and see you sometime? And I said, yeah. And then he says, where can I call you? And I said, well, call me at work. I work at Sterling Electric Motors, and I answer the telephone. But I really didn't expect to ever hear from him again. I wasn't interested. I didn't care for him. And so I went home, you know, we went in. Lydia lived up the street, and she went home. Then he called me on Monday, and it just so happened that at work that I was on my break when he called, and the girl who was relieving me was very sophisticated. You know, she's secretary. These gals had really been around, boy, you know, during the war, they all had. And so she says, fella called you, you know, and she says, boy, what a sexy voice, you know. She says, he has. She says, who is he? So immediately I felt a little tug, you know, and jealousy. Oh, you know, she told me his name, and I said, oh, I just met him. Did he say he'd call back? She said, yes, he would. So he did. And he wanted a date. So I went out with him that Saturday. And I stood up somebody just to go out with him. I had a date for Saturday. But because he was coming, I did a terrible thing. I left early. I made sure that he got there before this other fellow. Oh, I did not reach this other guy. But I was curious about this one because this gal had said, boy, does he have a sexy voice. You know, he has a beautiful voice. And so then when he arrived, my sister-in-law was there. And he was all dressed up, and he'd borrowed a car, and he really is nice looking, really handsome. But I still didn't notice. But everybody said, ooh, you know, isn't he good looking? Where'd you find him? Because men were very scarce. They were still scarce. If you only knew. Didn't your mother ever tell you? Oh, man shortage and all that. And so he was so presentable and so clean cut and courteous. And I was very impressed. I went out, and he was very, we went to a movie, and he was impressed because I didn't smoke, you know. And he said he was testing me then, you know, do you want to sit in the smoking section, not smoking? He said he liked the girl, didn't smoke. And so more and more I'm trying to please him. I did smoke every once in a while, but not, I was never able to smoke because I had bronchitis.
Did he smoke?
No, he didn't. And so, you know, he was so courteous, and I was so appreciative. I appreciated going out with a young man that, a war hero, you know, all, you start counting. He's got this, he's got that. But still, I had my doubts because we were different races. And I thought, again, it's temporary. No, this is just temporary. It's a date. But I was flattered. That such a handsome, clean young man with all these wonderful attributes would want to take me out. And although a lot of fellows at Sterling had been trying to date me, I did not really trust them. But somehow, because I had met him at a girlfriend's house, and I thought, well, if he is a friend of this family, then he must be nice. So then I continued dating. I dated an awful lot, but they were all boys that I had that were coming back from the service, and I wanted to date. For some reason, something had come over me where I wanted to date starting Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Sunday was for me, you know. So I cleaned house all day Sunday, did my hair, laundry, worked like crazy, and I had to be finished by 5 so I could take a bath, relax, and get myself rested so I could go out and dance. I used to love to dance. And I was always looking for good dancers. You know, somebody that, the Palladium, your mother will tell you, was, I'm sure, was the place to go. So that's all I did. Because I had been so lonely and so deprived of all of that, all I wanted to do was go out and date and dance, have fun. And, of course, I was looking for a mate. But nobody really was ready. The fellows were not ready to settle down. They were, they had war jitters. They didn't have jobs. So we took them as they were. We just took them for what heroes we thought they were. And like I told you, if I dated a fellow who that I liked, and like my husband ended up not having, he never had any money. he had to borrow a car in order to take me out. And he started coming over more and more. During the week, I'd work all day, and then he'd come over at night. He'd be there by 7. And he'd stay, sometimes a little too long, and I'd have to ask him to leave because I had to get up and go to work in the morning. He wasn't working. And then he'd come back again the following night, and then he would take me out on Saturday. And really, he just moved in. And the fellows that I had been dating were calling me, and I started saying, well, I'm busy. I'm dating somebody steadily. So they all dropped off. I lost track of all of them except my husband. And he came over every night because he would come over to his mother's and sister. They lived together and have dinner a lot. And then he'd come over and see me, and he was going to college. I met him in July, so we had a summer romance, you know, where we went to the beach and we had fun, and it was nice. And he had a nice group of friends. And I really shouldn't have gone because I should have known, you know, I was not of their race, okay? Still, I had been involved in this world, so I thought I fit in, yet there was a little edge there that I wasn't quite sure about. And we did break up. That's September when he went back to college, because somehow we didn't think it was right, the race issue.
You talked about that?
Yeah, we did. And we both agreed that maybe we better just not see one another. But he didn't stay away, you know. He came right back. And I, in my head, I thought, that's all right. I'll find somebody else. There's plenty there waiting. You know, I figured I could just pick up where I had left off before. And I didn't care that much. But he came back that very same night. And we'd had our talk, and he went, I went in, I was going to bed, my grandmother was going to bed, everybody was going to bed. It was 9. And he came back, and he had thought it over. He said he didn't want to break up, that he needed me. So I thought I needed him, and so we went on. Then he dropped out of school. By Christmas vacation, he went to work at the post office, and he never went back. And he bought me a ring, an engagement ring, and I was so happy. I thought that was the sweetest thing that ever happened to me, and I was just flattered and delighted, and he knew I... By then I was in love with him, and he knew. So my family was happy, and of course his family had been treating me, I think, as nicely, but it won't last, that attitude, while this is just another friendship. And his sister was always standoffish. His brother didn't care for me at all. Wouldn't even stay in the same room, because I don't think he wanted his brother to get involved with me. And so he did not live with the family.
Your husband?
No. He was boarding with another family because there wasn't enough room for him. And the house was his sister's house, who was married. And his brother's 5 years younger had come home from the Navy, and he moved in. This is what was happening. And his mother lived there, so there were 4 people living in a 2-bedroom house, and they were crowded. So he was living with a family in a spare room.
Where was his father?
Dead. He died before he ever went in service. He died just before he graduated from high school. So that was sad, very sad.
What had he done?
In his lifetime?
Yes.
You mean, what was his trade?
He
came from Oklahoma, and he worked in the oil fields as a boilermaker. And Mrs. Price said they make a lot of money, boilermakers. But she said that when they were young, he did this, and he was burned on the job. The body was burned badly. It left him addicted to morphine. They gave him morphine to ease the pain. And in those days, that's what they did. But when they had to draw him away from morphine, you know, and I guess they were able to do it. But then he had liked that heady feeling, I guess, that he got, even though he no longer needed anything. He started drinking for no reason, really, outside of the fact that he liked that heady feeling. This is what Mrs. Price told me. And it became a disease. So he was always very restless, she said, and they had their children in Texas, Oklahoma, those 2 states. They had 3 of them, and they too were part of the migration that came here in the 30s. Because I guess they were looking for work. And he came from a family of 10, and he was the oldest.
The father.
And they all came together, all the brothers and sisters. And Mrs. Price catered to him quite a bit, I guess. And she said that they lived with one another. Wherever there was a meal, that's where they ate. Whoever had something, that's where they went. If somebody had a house, they all moved in it. There was a lot of sharing, let's put it that way. And lots of cousins. One of his sisters had 10 children. That's a lot of kids. Another one had 4 or 5. I mean, here, they're multiplying. And Mrs. Price had 3. But she always felt that she was a little bit better than they were. She came from Tennessee, and the people from Tennessee have a little something going for them that, I don't know what it was, really. I think she was hardworking. I think she was good, strong. She saw herself as being the strong one, and that she unfortunately had a husband who liked to drink, but he was good looking and he was nice when he wasn't drinking, but terrible when he was. And he beat the family up, and he beat her up when he was drinking. Still, she put up with that. Until he finally got so bad, I guess, that towards the time when Roy was 16, 17 years old, the neighbors were beginning to complain. I guess he was really bad, dragging down the street from the saloon. And I think that a social worker came to see her. And there was, she said there was some talk about they were going to take the kids away, put them in a foster home. This is the younger ones. Roy was already grown, more or less. I guess if they're 18 or so, 17 or 18, you've got to give him credit. The poor guy was still going to school. Sort of ran away from it all. They went to the beach, and they, not the girl, but the boy, the two the boys. He used to take his brother to the beach and crowd the kids in the neighborhood. And so she asked her husband to leave, because she was supporting the family anyway, and she was cleaning. She was, became a cleaning woman, cleaning houses for the people who could afford her. And and a brother took him in, but by then he was very, very sick. They didn't know that he was dying. Nobody knew. I guess they all saw him looking so bad they thought he was drunk, when actually he was dying from the effects of alcohol. So he didn't last too long after his brother took him in, went to the hospital, and he was very uncooperative at the hospital. He wouldn't do anything they told him to do. And I think his liver was completely gone, and he died in the hospital. But I don't think Roy ever forgave his mother, you see. He held that against her.
Asking him to leave?
Yeah, she told me when she and I were still talking that he accused her of throwing his father out of the house when he was dying. And he never quite understood why. And she says, I never knew that he looked at it that way. She says, I didn't know that he had that held that against me. And he doesn't, to this day, never talks about his mother, and he doesn't seem to care anything about her memory. There was no love there And yet she was the one really who worked so hard to raise him and kept him clean, and still he had a problem, a serious problem. All of them, we all have problems. They have theirs. I always said, well, they have their problems, I have my problems. Maybe we can all work it out. I didn't know this when I met him. I mean, all of that was, his father died, and he went to work at U.S. Rubber and Tire. They used to make tires. And he had a girlfriend.
Roy
had a girlfriend, yeah, in the neighborhood. But her father was an alcoholic, too. And they had they were beautiful family, beautiful kids. There were four kids. And again, the same thing, you know, the mother worked, the father drank. And everyone expected Roy to marry this girl. Her name, what is her name? Get her name. And it was a high school romance. They went to high school together, and they were always together, and they needed one another. And they were engaged, but they had a fight, and he joined the service. That was his way of running away from it all. He joined, and I guess he was gone just a short time. He was overseas when he received a letter from her telling him that she got married. And her sister returned the ring to his mother. And so, I guess there was another shock for him. You know, the death of his father, running away, and then his sweetheart got married. And so, I think he got depressed. And then I don't think the South Pacific is, 4 years of that can be pretty rough. So he says that he got very tired of it all. And he says that he had the flu. I guess this was in New Guinea somewhere. And he said he just lost consciousness, didn't know what happened to him. And the next thing he knew, he was in a hospital. And they were shipping him home. And he says, next thing I knew, I was talking to psychiatrists every day. So I decided to go along with it. If anything, to get home. If they wanted to give me a psychiatric discharge, he says, I just said, okay. So he said he faked it. But I don't think so. I think that he really was tired. I think he really was exhausted. And he wasn't really faking it. He really was very depressed. And so he went, they put him in a convalescent hospital in Riverside. You know where that is?
Yes.
I didn't know him then at all. And so he spent 6 months there, and the family was going to see him, and they didn't know what in the world was wrong. Everyone was concerned about the serviceman. They didn't know at all, and he didn't tell them what it was. But his mother, I think, had an idea. And so that was why when he brought me around, I think there had been other girls, but I was the first one that he brought steadily. And it just so happened that I was different in many ways from the girls that he dated. I used to laugh a lot, and we were silly kids, you know. We enjoyed dancing, and we giggled a lot, just like kids, girls. And he was so good-looking that I guess I smiled even more. I guess I really blossomed out, and he needed that. He was so depressed, and I guess he was so quiet, and he was mad at that girl, and he was determined not to go back to her because she had gotten married. In the meantime, she'd gotten a divorce, and she wanted him back. So he met me, and he hung on to me because he didn't want to go back to her. He was determined not to go back to her. But I think there was a terrific pull there. And especially since she wanted him back. I did not know any of this. I was living in another world. But little by little, the family started to insinuate things, and they'd bring her name up, and they had her picture up, you know.
They wanted him to go back to you think?
I don't think his mother did. I think his brother did. Because he started to date her younger sister. And he was always... Oh, her name was Ruth. Is that her name? It's funny how you put things out of your head. Ruth was a younger sister that he dated. Bailey was her last name. Eleanor Bailey was his fiancée's name. And so we were engaged, but I kept hearing the name Eleanor Bailey, especially from his sister and the brother, and Eleanor, to both of us all the time. So I decided, you know, I started thinking, well, if there is something going on here between them, they better figure this out before we go on with this engagement. I had had other romances that I had been mad, you know, I thought I was madly in love. And it hadn't worked out, but I had had time to get over it and to put it out of my head, out of my heart, and go on. And I didn't want him to be thinking about someone else and, you know, go with me. So we broke up. I gave him back his ring. I told him, I said, you need more time. This is wrong. You better go back and find out if you're still in love with Eleanor. I think she wants you back. I know she wants you back. So he took her out. And he had just made up his mind that he wasn't going back to her, that's all. So he came back to me. He begged me to take his ring back. So in my head, it was in my heart, my mind, and all, I was relieved. I thought, well, he doesn't love her. He doesn't want her. He had a chance to. He had his chance. And that was when I started making plans for a wedding. Mm-hmm. When he insisted I take back the ring. To me, an engagement ring meant a wedding. But to him, an engagement meant going on and being engaged, you know, just to tie me down. But I wanted to get married then, and he wasn't quite sure. So the ring would go off again, you know, and then come back again. So finally I gave him an ultimatum. Well, you know, I just can't go on like this, you know. I'm going to be 22, you know, and if you and I are not going to get married, then we should break up and make it stick. And I said, because I want to date. I want to be free. And but you see, that was his way. That was his attitude. It was his part of his personality. He was like, I don't know, you know. This man who had everything going for him just didn't know. So, of course, I was the one that made the plans for the wedding. And then I started saving money for it, thinking that he was too, and it ended up that he didn't have any money at all. And I really wasn't, you know, maybe wasn't that secure, but...
So when did you get married then?
We got married in August the 3rd, 1947. And
what was your wedding like?
Well, I had gone back to the Catholic faith, and I was testing him every inch of the way. Yeah, I was going to church. Then now it was a Catholic church. I was trying to learn the Catholic religion because I was not raised in the Catholic faith. But by then, a lot of my friends were Catholic. Being Latin, they're all Catholics, you know. And I thought, well, I'll probably end up a Catholic, so I better learn the religion so I can fit in with the family and be a Catholic and have a Catholic.